As World War II raged in 1943, a faint radio signal could be heard high on a mesa in the southwestern U.S. state of New Mexico, one in which announcers and performers only used their first names, and the station's location was never given. A pianist known only as Edward sometimes played selections by German composer Richard Wagner. It might have sounded something like this. An outsider listening to these broadcasts would have had good reason to be puzzled. There was no way to know that Edward the pianist was Edward Teller, the famous nuclear physicist. At the time, Teller was living in a secret town in the Jemez Mountains with hundreds of other scientists and thousands of workers, racing the clock to develop the weapon that would bring an end to the war. The tiny radio station was one of the ways residents tried to create a sense of community in a town that didn't officially exist. Before the war, Los Alamos was home only to a school for boys. After being selected as the main site for developing the atomic bomb, Los Alamos was placed under the highest security and turned into a teeming factory town with a population of more than 3,500. Of the thousands of people working on the project, only those at the highest levels knew what they were working on. That is, until August 1945, when the United States dropped two atomic bombs on Japan that killed some 200,000 people. The news broke immediately, and newsreel announcers retold the accounts given by the airmen who dropped the bombs.
The explosion was a big ball of fire. Anyone not having dark glasses would have received a visual shock several miles away. One of the crew members said, "My God," when he saw what had happened. What had been Hiroshima was a white mountain of smoke.
Japan surrendered less than a week later.
At exactly 10 seconds after 7:35 this morning, August 14th, from London, Swiss Radio has announced that Japan has accepted the Allied note requesting surrender, the conclusion of the war in the Pacific.
After the war, some thought Los Alamos might become a ghost town. Its singular purpose had been accomplished, but the government had invested billions of dollars in the labs atop the mesa, so some of the scientists stayed and the research continued. Today, Los Alamos National Laboratory is a 16-hectare campus that hosts a broad range of scientific research. Terry Wallace, the lab's principal associate director for science, technology, and engineering, says the concept of Los Alamos, bringing together scientists from different fields to solve a single problem, was revolutionary.
It invented a whole new way of doing science, and that was to make interdisciplinary teams to do very complicated problems. Before that, you know, an individual lab would focus on a particular problem anywhere in the nation. And that played over to after the war.
Those teams have led Los Alamos into computer development, disease pathology, and climate change research. Wallace says the lab also models the threats posed by bioterror weapons and disease.
It turns out that we can monitor the particular toxin down to very minute levels, and so Los Alamos is involved in building sensors to be able to give you an early warning on when such a toxin should be available. Okay. Bird flu is the same kind of thing we have, like we're making portable kits so that people can do a very simple test to find out if you've been exposed to a flu.
One of the lab's newest breakthroughs happened in June of this year when its Roadrunner supercomputer, named after New Mexico's state bird, became the first in the world to complete 1,000 trillion calculations per second, something known as a petaflop. Among other applications, Roadrunner will help Los Alamos test the nation's aging atomic arsenal without detonating bombs to ensure a viable nuclear deterrent. But many people object to the lab's weapons research. Ed Grothis used to work at the laboratory, but decades ago he felt bad about the nature of his work. He quit during the Vietnam War.
The first 20 years I worked in the laboratory, and I worked most of that time in a weapons development group, making better weapons of mass destruction. Be sure to put better in quotation marks.
Now Grothis runs a nearby salvage shop that he fills with scrap purchased from the National Laboratory. Grothis calls his shop the Black Hole.
Everything goes in and hardly anything goes out.
Everything is right. You'll find scientific equipment, scrap metal, file cabinets, cameras, Geiger counters, old computer parts, even plastic flowers stuffed into his warehouse and scattered across the grounds. But that is nothing compared to what Grothis has stored in two huge shipping containers, two 40-ton granite monuments, each nearly 13 meters tall.
The monuments incorporate an obelisk, and what I call doomsday stones. And inscribed on the doomsday stones is a story of Los Alamos in 15 languages, a Rosetta Stone for the nuclear age.
The obelisks are a Grotha's protest against nuclear weapons. He hopes to erect the monuments in a location where they can be seen from kilometers away. The fact that the black hole exists, with its piles of used lab equipment, is testament to how much things have changed in Los Alamos. And it's not just the research. The music is different, too. Far from the days of anonymous piano concerts on secret radio stations, this group, called the Hill Stompers, made up mainly of Los Alamos workers, occasionally leads pub crawls through the streets of nearby Santa Fe, dressed in outlandish outfits and trailed by a merry group of followers. Today, Los Alamos and its scientists are anything but a secret. For Focus, I'm Marissa Melton.
The explosion was a big ball of fire. Anyone not having dark glasses would have received a visual shock several miles away. One of the crew members said, "My God," when he saw what had happened. What had been Hiroshima was a white mountain of smoke, and when we saw it first, it was already up to 25,000 feet. About 1,000 feet off the ground, it looked like boiling dust. It extended over most of the city, churning down there. And the center of the impact was in the center of the city. And the boiling continued several minutes as we watched.
At exactly 10 seconds after 7:35 this morning, August 14th, from London, Swiss Radio has announced that Japan has accepted the Allied note requesting surrender to the conclusion of the war in the Pacific. We read that flash to you at 10 seconds after 7:35.
It invented a whole new way of doing science, and that was to make interdisciplinary teams to do very complicated problems. Before that, you know, an individual lab would focus on a particular problem anywhere in the nation. And that played over to after the war. It turns out that we can monitor the particular toxin down to very minute levels. And so Los Alamos is involved in building sensors to be able to give you an early warning on when such a toxin should be available. Okay. Bird flu is the same kind of thing we have. Like, we're making portable kits so that people could do a very simple test to find out if you've been exposed to a flu.
The first 20 years I worked in the laboratory, and I worked most of that time in a weapons development group, making better weapons of mass destruction. Be sure to put better in quotation marks. Everything goes in and hardly anything goes out. The monuments incorporate an obelisk and what I call doomsday stones. And inscribed on the doomsday stones is a story of Los Alamos in 15 languages, a Rosetta Stone for the nuclear age.